And we're back, Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. And shortly we will have, we are confident, Stephen Cowan. So I'll tell you what the issue is. It's in the past 3 or 4 days, there's been a historic interview with President Bashar al-Assad of Syria. It was conducted by the Russian media. The Russian media are back. People, it's more than one superpower, apparently, which, let us just admit it, this is the what is creating all the little migraine headaches in Washington, Paris, and London, is that they had tried to run the world all by themselves. And so it doesn't – it need not be antagonistic, but there is an issue there. And we're still working on getting Mr. Cowens, but we – the encouraging news is we have actually got the number. Thank you, Brendan. Now, I just tell you, and Phil, you can join in on this. President Assad has given a number of interviews. What we've been struck by is that
– yeah, it's going to voicemail, so it's still not working.
Yeah, okay. So he has been – he's a very analytical individual. It really stands out. And it's interesting that we don't have leaders that seem to practice the same technique. He's very careful, but he's also full of information. He speaks to the point, and he's a rather powerful logician. And I see happily that we probably have our own logician, but partly this is a cultural thing. I'm asking myself why Obama and Harper and others don't seem to use the same technique. I do read their interviews, but they're usually orchestrated such a way that I can't quite get what they're – they seem to be more interested in sound bites, to put it frankly. They want one message to go out, and so they harp on it. But at any rate – that's our problem. So that's the backdrop. But the problem that they've had is that, and as these interviewers want to know, and Gallants will inform us more about it. But they, there is a war on terror allegedly, and the U.S. leads a coalition that is supposedly against terror. Except they will not allow President Assad to be in the coalition. And they do not want Russia in the coalition. Well, then on what basis do you have a common front against terrorism? And now we have, I believe, Stephen Cowens with us. Are you there, Stephen?
I am. Hello, Phil.
Hello. It's Cowens.wordpress.com. Two very important contributions in the past week at that site, Cowens.wordpress.com. And we, of course, wanted to address the one that you featured. And I noticed that your approach was to reprint the text of the interview with Bashar al-Assad. And let's just ask you that. I mean, you make your own very good, excellent commentary on matters. But you chose on this occasion to just feature the interview. Tell me why.
I tried to feature the highlights of interviews with Assad because you don't often hear Assad's perspective in Western media. I think it's valuable to be able to see or to look at the conflict in Syria from the perspective of someone who's involved in it. Mm-hmm. And what I found important about his views, you could call it his ideology, and it, or if it's an ideology, it's one that I think that would certainly be supported by most people in the West, and that's an ideology that says that people within a country should have the sovereignty to decide what goes on within that country, and their affairs shouldn't be dictated from abroad. Mm-hmm. And he's been... he's been adamant in making this point that Syrians need to decide what happens in Syria, that the decisions can't be made in Washington or at the UN Security Council. And he reiterated that point once again, and I think it was an important point to reiterate because the United States, in the person of John Kerry, has been talking about how it's necessary for Assad to step aside. And the British foreign minister very arrogantly has been saying that Assad has no future in Syria and that he must step aside.
No future in Syria. Of course, he is a Syrian.
Yeah,
so he not only doesn't get to be president, doesn't get to be a Syrian.
No, the British and the United States will decide who's going to be a Syrian and who forms the government in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there have been a number of important developments in Syria recently. I haven't seen much of this in the Western press. In fact, I haven't seen it at all, but I've been looking at the Syrian press. And the Syrians are talking about Vladimir Putin putting forth some proposals at the UN General Assembly at the end of the month. And according to the Syrians, what Putin is going to do is, this, the way they put it, is turn the tables on the West and say, you know, we don't think that you're really serious about eliminating ISIS, but if you are, let's bring together all the forces that are fighting ISIS and eliminate it. And this would include the Syrian army, which is bearing the brunt of the battle. And it's interesting to see how the United States is reacting to that, because obviously U.S. state officials have some idea that this is going to be presented. And there's something interesting that I really learned in the last few weeks, which is that, you know, you don't need WikiLeaks to find out what's going on in Washington, because it's all hidden in plain sight. All you have to do is read the press very carefully, and it's all laid out there in black and white. So if you go back and you look over the last few years at what the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal has been reporting on what U.S., I mean, high officials in the U.S. state have been telling them about their strategy in Iraq, or not in Iraq, in Syria, you see something really interesting. So essentially what the United States is saying, and they said this recently as well, that their focus remains destroying ISIS ultimately, but using it for now to force a political settlement. And so using it now means degrading it, but not yet eliminating it. And you recall that Obama has always said that the goal is to degrade and ultimately to destroy ISIS. So we might have asked why he said degrade and not simply why the goal isn't to eliminate ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So from the U.S. point of view, a political settlement seems to mean elimination of the Syrian state's, you know, nationalist pan-Arab ideology, or just to make this simpler, elimination of Assad and what they call his cronies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read through what state officials have been saying over the last few years, that is U.S. state officials, they've been saying, we don't want Assad to go yet, because if he goes, there's going to be a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And it going to be the kind of vacuum that might be filled by ISIS or people we don't want to fill the vacuum. So we've learned our lessons from Afghanistan and Libya and Iraq, and we don't want to recreate that kind of chaos. But what we want to do is we want to establish a stalemate. We want to put enough pressure on the Assad government that it's finally forced to accept some kind of political settlement. And at that point, we'll organize a secession by the people that we want governing Syria. So they've talked openly about drawing up elaborate plans for a post-Assad Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And they say things like, the end game requires a very careful calibration that doesn't tip the meter in an unintended way toward groups that could produce the kind of post-Assad Syria that we aren't looking for.
Yes.
Another interesting thing is they talk about the CIA's mission, which has been defined by the White House to seek a political settlement, a scenario that relies on an eventual stalemate among the warring factions rather than a clear victor. And as a result, the White House had put limits on the CIA's authority, enabling it to provide enough support to help ensure U.S.-supported militias don't lose, but not enough for them to win.
Hmm. Yeah, they've even auditioned. They ought to remember, you know, that some, probably a large portion of the population, judging by polls, have sort of noticed all these things. You know, they've introduced this to various Syrian leaders. So-and-so here, he's going to be a great leader. He met Hillary. And then there's other, and then he disappears into the mist. And then they say, well, we've got a new one. And this has been an embarrassing but determined effort on their part to assume that they are going to just be able to reach in and pick out who will be the leader.
Yes, and they're having difficulty finding a leader at the moment. Yeah. So, and as a result, now they've kind of changed their plans, and they've acknowledged it and said, okay, so once we had a political settlement, our idea was that immediately Assad would step aside. Now we're willing to let him stay there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We have a transition.
But he will step aside.
Oh, yes, but he cannot continue in Syria.
You notice how they're floating stories. And now that brings me, by the way, to a second column you did, and we may as well mix them in. Phyllis Bennis, I think that's her name, was being interviewed on a Real News. And she joined in on this thing of Assad stepping down. Actually, I'll let you explain it. A very objectionable way to... And to me, a non-starter, if you really want to resolve this. But what is your issue with Phyllis Bennis?
Well, this is kind of interesting. There was a story in The Guardian, the British newspaper, that said that Martti Ahtisaari, the former Finnish president, had been sent to talk to the five permanent members of the UN Security Council by the elders, you know, the group that includes Kofi Annan and Jimmy Carter. And I guess his mandate was to talk to them and talk about ways in which the Syrian conflict could be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and I think he misrepresented, or someone misrepresented what actually happened, but he said that he went to talk to the UN, or the Russian ambassador to the UN, Vitaly Churkin. And Churkin said to him, in response to the question, how could you resolve this, what anyone with half a brain would say, which was, well, if you want to resolve the conflict, first of all, stop arming the opposition. Secondly, pressure the armed groups to embrace a political solution. And then Ahtisaari said that Churkin also said, well, find an elegant way for Assad to step aside.
Hmm.
Now, to me, this is simply talking about hypotheticals. If you want to achieve this goal, that's the way I think you do it.
Yes. You need both parties to determine whether that was said. You notice how they fix on these things? And U.S. media goes with, oh, the Russians are wobbling. They're abandoning. They're selling. You know, and you don't have them saying anything. You have a Finnish representative claiming he heard something in a private conversation, which, you know, you're not really supposed to do that to one another, right? I mean, you go and you're standing around talking, and you're not saying, I'm going to repeat what you tell me to the world. And also, what did you say prior to that?
Right.
What was your role? And this is in a courtroom, they toss it out.
Right. But in this case, the Guardian and others have spun this in a way that suggests that Churkin was saying, we have a proposal.
Ah, yes.
Missed
opportunity.
Right, but he didn't have a proposal. He's just talking about, well, if you really wanted to resolve this, this is how you might go about it. Mm-hmm. But it has been interpreted as, well, he put a proposal on the table, and then Ahtisaari said, and I went back to the other members of the UN Security Council, and they said, oh, no, we're not interested because Assad is about to fall anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't believable because the United States has never really wanted Assad to fall. They want him to step aside in an orderly way.
Yeah, to supplant him.
Yes. So Phyllis Bennis was asked to comment on this. And the way she commented on it was to wring her hands and say, to deplore what she saw as the failure of the United States to explore the possibility that Assad stepping down could have been negotiated. Mm-hmm. So she started saying, essentially said that the United States should have negotiated this stepping down when they had a chance.
Yeah. You know, a wobbly rock like the Churkin story is a bad place to do analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to see her join in with such enthusiasm and working that, and you say, I don't think there's 10 minutes of material here. There's a problem. He never said he said it. So why don't we just stick with what the Russians do say? And why doesn't she get behind that or not get behind it? By the way, I mean, aren't we back to Moscow phobia? I mean, this is ridiculous. If you say terrorism exists, all the major capitals agree that it does, and you say, well, that's, you know, those people are outside the law who are murdering civilians to reach political goals are terrorists, and we have no business with them. Then that's you make a common front, which, and by the way, the United Nations still exists. You can work up a common position. But we're back into this thing where the United States says, well, we want a coalition against terror, but we don't want the Russians in it. We don't want Assad in it.
Well, they say that the Americans now say that they would welcome Russia's direct involvement in battling Islamic State extremists, but not if it's done in coordination with Mr. Assad.
Well,
which you could see that's what they would say given their orientation, which is to use ISIS to pressure Assad to step.
You know, at the end of the day, I mean, if you were in the same room with them, you'd say, in other words, you're for ISIS so long as they're fighting Assad. You're going to continue. And why don't we address that? Assad in his interview said, look, the people who claim they're against terrorism, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, are all, Jordan, are all arming, and particularly Turkey, there's not even a mystery. They're arming and training foreign terrorists who have come. He says our army's made up of Syrians. Our enemies made up of people from all over the place training in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is what we're dealing with, right? States who are not, in fact, opposed to terrorism.
No, they're not.
It is state-sponsored terrorism. I mean, Turkey does that.
No, yeah. And as I said, it's quite plain that what they're involved in is supporting ISIS and using ISIS as a way of creating a stalemate. It kind of reminds me of what the United States and Britain did in the Second World War when the Red Army was bearing the brunt of the battle against the Nazis. And they delayed the opening of the Second Front because, you know,
mm-hmm.
Let's weaken the Nazis and let's weaken the...
Let them bleed each other.
And in fact, if you look at what the Israelis are saying, they're using the same kind of terminologies and mm-hmm. reference, saying, this is great for us. Mm-hmm. We'll let the, you know, the Sunni militant extremists and the Iranians who are supporting the Syrians, we'll let them all fight it out and bleed each other dry and...
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, that was said clearly and for the record by Henry Kissinger. He gave an interview talking about Iran and Iraq. And they had sicked Saddam Hussein on Iran, and that was an 8-year war costing 1 million lives on the Iranian side. I don't know how many on the Iraqi side. He said, let them kill each other. Proud of that, by the way. I mean,
what's really regrettable,
pretty sadistic individuals,
is that the Arabs have been fighting amongst themselves for over a century, over a century, much to the delight of colonial powers and imperialist powers, mm-hmm. and much to the delight of Israel as well. I mean, the Israelis have actually said. This is the quote, this is a playoff situation in which you need both teams to lose, but at least you don't want one to win. We'll settle for a tie.
Mm-hmm.
Let them both bleed, hemorrhage to death. That's the strategic thinking here. As long as this lingers, there's no real harm from Syria.
Well, to borrow their language, that is what happened in Libya. Libya continues to hemorrhage.
Yes.
And so on that score, it strikes me that they would accept a Libya and Syria, so long as it's bleeding, not a threat to them. So what?
Exactly.
Assad helped very much, and this is an issue that really all of us should reconsider and ought to look at, and I know you must have thought about this a lot. He says that why don't we face the fact that the U.S. and Britain and the other NATO gang thought it was very smart to have Mujahideen freedom fighters in Afghanistan to stop the, to fight the Soviets. He said, that's who these people are. Could you talk about that? I mean, this is a long-standing technique.
Yes, it's been used for decades and decades. Essentially, the West establishing these kinds of alliances of convenience with jihadists and Sunni militant extremists and using them to bring down nationalist and communist and socialist governments. And so this is simply the latest iteration of that long-standing strategy. Mm-hmm. And you can see that. I mean, they're quite open now about this. We don't want ISIS to fail, not yet. We want them to force the Assad government to into some kind of political settlement.
It's a hammer that you can throw away. Again, we have seen, you can go on the internet and watch Hillary talking about it. She said, well, you know, we did create them. She was sitting in front of some committee, one of the most cynical comments I ever saw. She said, you know, we did create these people because we wanted to use them against the Soviets. You know, it's one of those things where you want to say, could we freeze frame that and just walk this back? Because why are we going to the discussion? I mean, they know they did give them the arms, just as the Turks are giving them the arms, and for a dirty, cynical purpose. And that is what you ought to stop doing. I guess I should raise the name Jeremy Corbyn. Before I say much more on that, I want to make sure, though, that I say that this is Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. Please go to that site. You could see the Assad interview and also the Phyllis Bennis, which is, in my view, amusing. We should credit the our population. The British have chosen, Labour Party has chosen a man who does say, somebody's paying for these weapons. Somebody's training these people. They have high-powered weapons. And he appears ready to hold them responsible. That's an echo, is it, of the 2013 when the British Parliament said no? Something kind of interesting is developing here, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this certainly is a popular opposition to the kinds of or to what it is that governments in the West are getting up to. All I can say is that I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we all follow your analysis. You're always very rational. You're full of facts, and you use powerful logic. I'd be very interested in reading, if you're thinking of writing about it in the future, to this phenomenon in Britain where a man who was supposed to be the left wing of the Labour Party and a joke went from being a joke to being the smashing new leader.
Yes, the smashing new leader that others say is not electable. The ones who said that he wouldn't be elected as the leader of the party.
Yes. The strategic voter thinkers. I suppose one other matter I want to make sure I ask about is this. He made the point about Kurds, and there is a lot of talk trying to separate. I'll just make this the last question. I liked his answer to that. They said, well, you know, the Kurds are fighting and they want independence. What do you say? And tell us what you make of his answer.
You're going to have to do that.
Well, and my memory is he said, actually, they're Syrians. Of course they're Kurds. I was very impressed by that because, you know, they said, oh, we got you now. You're going to have to give up the Kurdish territory. Mm-hmm. But his response seemed to be, no, we respect Kurds. They're part of what we call Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Rather wholesome answer, I thought. And he said, I don't have a problem with them and what their wishes are, that we have a constitution. I guess back to your point earlier, he said the Syrian people will decide all this. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yes, and they shouldn't decide. Another interesting thing that I should just point out quickly is that the Syrians are also saying, you know, Russia's now agreed to participate in the fight against not only ISIS, but Jabhat al-Nusra, which the West doesn't seem to really care about, but which is almost the same as ISIS. And they're doing this because we've invited them to do it. So what they're doing is legal, unlike what it is that the United States and France and Britain and Canada are doing, all of which is illegal and contrary to international law. Well, that is, you know, intervening in our territory without our permission.
Perfect. Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Taylor Report, write to us, taylor at CIUT.fm. Thanks, Phil Conlon. Thanks, Lucas, and we'll see you next week.